This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
They tried to make me go to rehab, but I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no. My daddy thinks I'm fine. Just try to make me go to rehab. I won't go, go, go.
Good evening and welcome to Hooked, Joy 94.9's program about addiction. Research shows that the LGBTI community has addiction problems of at least twice that of the general population, and we want to explore why and how this has come about. There are many suffering addiction, many more that are affected by those in active addiction, and people that are grateful in recovery. My name is David.
And my name is Tosh. What are some of the reasons behind this problem? Are there pathways towards recovery and change? How does addiction affect loved ones, family members, and partners of those in active addiction? We are not experts in these fields, but a couple of friends who both happen to be in recovery. We believe that there needs to be a conversation in our community.
That's right, Tosh, we aren't experts. But if you'd like to join us in that conversation, you can SMS us on 0427-JOY949, that's 0427-569-949, or email us at onair@joy.org.au, and that's also on hooked@joy.org.au. If you're experiencing immediate problems or if content of this program raises issues that cause distress, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14, that's lifeline.org.au, or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36, which is beyondblue.org.au. Hey, I've got to tell you, Tosh, glad to have you here.
Thank you,
Russ,
babe.
Is away.
Where's he gone?
Well, Russ has gone to New York. He's probably listening from New York even as we speak. He's away for a few weeks, and it's a pleasure to have you here in the studio. Now, Tosh, you've been on Hooked before.
I have indeed. I was back on in early January. We were doing a show on this show. We're doing a segment on self-harm and synthetic drugs, and I had a great time, and I'm very happy to be back.
Yeah, you were the guest of honour, and it was great to have you. Look, if you ever want to listen to the podcast on Tosh, you can go to joy.org.au/hooked and you can have a quick listen in on that. We've got quite a lot of podcasts up now on iTunes as well, so you can choose whichever way you want to listen to Hooked.
It's wherever you want it.
Yeah, I know. joy.org.au/hooked.
Go
whichever
now.
You want. Yeah, you could. But look, probably more importantly, it is a good time to listen.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Thank you, as I say. Thank you for stepping in tonight. Now, I don't know whether you remember, but every week we have something very exciting.
No.
You don't remember? Well, here it goes.
Addiction of the week.
Oh, yes, it is time for Addiction of the Week. Now, this week I had a chat with you earlier again, well, sometime late last week, and we decided on pornography addiction.
Well, what would I know about that?
Well, I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting one.
It is fascinating.
It isn't necessarily regarded as an addiction as per se, but it usually comes with a few other addictions as well. So people having other problems in other areas may actually turn to pornography.
Well, and we're talking from a perspective of firmly far from expertise here, but even from an outsider's perspective, even someone who's struggled with things similar to this, it's something that can be the butt of many jokes, so to speak. It's something that is not well understood, and can the lines between what could be considered addictive or perfectly normal, or God forbid, boys being boys, or et cetera, et cetera.
A bit blurred?
Yeah, very unclear. And that might just be just as unclear for the sufferer as it is for anyone who is perhaps in their lives as well.
But as with any addiction, usually it's something that starts taking over a bit of life. I'm going to read you out a little personal story. Now, it isn't actually from our LGBT community, but it is from Beyond Blue. And I checked out an online forum today, and it's about a wife talking about her husband's porn addiction. I first came here when I needed help with my husband's depression, but I'm here a couple of months later. During the course of talking to my husband and hammering him for answers, I decided I'd do one of the things I never imagined doing. I snooped. What I've discovered has left me in absolute ruins. In December last year, over the course of 3 days, he searched for and visited 52 kinky websites and signed up on 13 kinky dating sites. When confronted, of course, he denied it, but I wasn't going to have any of it. To cut a long story short, I've discovered that he's addicted to porn and that he's even watched it at home right under my nose. So, you know, he's accepted that he has a massive problem and wants to get help wherever he can. And that's just one personal story on one of these online forums. Mm. So it can be quite common. But, you know, once again, it's when that starts to take over and it's affecting relationships, mm-hmm. it's affecting jobs, it's affecting functioning just in everyday life. Mm-hmm. What did you find out today about pornography addiction, other than the research that you did before coming to the show?
Well, I mean, it's not something I've done a lot of research into, I must admit. I mean, it's... No, I don't have any.
Look, I mean, you're in your early 20s. Oh, yes. Do you think it's different for your generation?
Yes, I do. It's something that's... It's actually, you know, you mentioned research and it's kind of thrown me off because it's actually something that's been a big topic for people my age for a long time. And now I'm in my early 20s, my very early 20s. And as a personal example, let's say... When I was in my very early teens, let's say even 11 and 12, I had an internet connection, my own computer, and from time to time, a bedroom with four walls and a ceiling. Now, I wasn't very popular at school, and I didn't know what I was doing with the other boys and girls, but here I had an access to sexual gratification from a very, very early age. And until the time I started... Well, getting around in my own communities and doing whatever shall be, I had this understanding of what sex supposedly should be through pornography built up over 6 or 7 years. And I don't think it's very hard for anyone to imagine that pornography is not the most natural depiction of perhaps how sexual encounters might play out in the wild. It can be, but especially for people my age, if your first experience is not very enjoyable and or just pretty awkward and pretty lanky as they are like to be, then I can imagine, and many people I know, well, you know, kind of have found themselves in this situation across hushed conversations at various tables, that why wouldn't you just go back to doing it yourself? You know what you like. We've built up so much experience doing it.
Which means when a sexual relationship or sex, you know, in your teens or something like that doesn't look like pornography, you're going, well, hang on, is that all there is?
It's a letdown. And you've got to remember all the other frets that come with, you know, sexual interactions in the real world for a teen or a young adult. It's often, you know, parties or social events. You're socialising, you're not sure about who you are, especially in our community, that there's so much discomfort about perhaps your depiction of yourself, your self-image, your comfort around other people. Well, I'm pretty comfortable with myself in my trackies in my own home, I hate to say, and it wipes out a lot of the middlemen. Now, I don't even have to get dressed. I can have the fan on, you know? This is overly simplifying the problem, but,
yeah,
like,
sure.
I genuinely want to reinforce the fact that, certainly anecdotally from my own experience, I did not enjoy interacting with, you know, other young men and women at when I was a younger individual. And,
certainly,
the internet's always there.
You know, certainly, from our community's perspective, if we're grappling with our own sexuality, we're going to be isolating a little bit more, especially if everybody else around us doesn't seem the same. Now, porn addiction occurs when a person viewing pornography with or without masturbating loses control over whether he or she will engage in that behaviour. Mm-hmm. And porn addicts look at and use porn compulsively despite the consequences that include an inability to form lasting social, intimate romantic relationships, intense feelings of depression, shame and isolation, disintegration of relationships with family, loss of many hours, loss of interest in non-porn activities such as work, school, socialising, trouble at work, financial issues, legal issues, usually related to illegal porn use. Mm-hmm. And also porn use is often combined with drug or alcohol abuse and physical injury caused by a compulsive masturbation, sexual dysfunction with real-world partners. So, you know, there are amazing consequences there.
There's some big ones, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they're similar to other sorts of addictions where, you know, you're going to go down the track of isolating and losing work hours and socialising with other people. So it's probably, you know, it is sort of conjectural whether it is an addiction or not. But the evidence that I've been seeing, it does seem to be, and that's why I thought I'd bring it up tonight. There are some amazing resources that people can turn to if they feel that it is getting a little bit out of control. Now, I was talking to you earlier on tonight. I said, well, there's the Seinfeld episode, obviously, which comes to my mind straight away, yeah. Which is when Jerry and Elaine and George and Kramer decide to have a bet who's not going to masturbate. Now, that wasn't because they were in addiction with porn, but at the same time, there's an amazing group in the United States, and it's an online resource, and it's called NoFap. Have you heard of that?
No, and I was mentioning. So my understanding of this, when I worked in and read NoFap on a piece of paper, I immediately thought of something more familiar to those of you who might hang around on various social media websites, the NoFap November Challenge. And this is only recently on the mind, of course, because it was actually made rather mainstream headlines this past November gone. And it's simply a challenge not to masturbate for the month of November. Now, all sorts of different things go into it. It started off as this kind of joke, in my understanding, that you were somehow going to be superhuman if you could refrain from these. It was
from fapping.
Yeah, originally portrayed as that you are somehow morally superior if you can not have a wank. But like, it's turned into this interesting challenge for people to reflect on how they spend their own part in, like, dry July. You know, people are using this. You know, basically. People clout, there's this attention that it's brought with it, to go, well, it's an interesting idea. Should I try it? If not, just to find out how much I would miss it if it was gone.
Yeah, well, that's one of the benefits I would expect of a fap-free
but
November.
I have not heard of NoFap.
Yeah, well, so NoFap, as I say, you can always do a web search and we'll pop something onto our podcast with a link to their particular community. It's a community-based porn recovery website. They offer tools and users' needs to be able to connect with other people. So once again, it's peer group support for individuals determined to quit porn and free themselves from compulsive sexual behaviours. With our website forums, articles and apps, NoFap helps our users overcome their sexual addictions so they can heal from porn-induced sexual dysfunction, improve their relationships, and ultimately live their most fulfilling sexual lives. Mm. Pretty amazing stuff.
Right, yeah. I mean, and just as a quick injection here, when I came into recovery, I would have not... I wanted to talk to as few people as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly amazed, for all sorts of addiction, just how much these peer support things work, and you know, even to the right down to the core of, you know, group therapy things.
Yeah,
you know, they benefited me earlier on.
But the last thing you wanted in addiction is to talk interaction to other people.
And yeah, exactly. To find out that there's even peer support for pornography addiction, I'm sure there are for many others, is just as astounding. You know, it works. It appears to, and the breadth to which the things you can apply it to is astounding.
Well, there are actually 12-step programs such as Sex Addicts Anonymous, Sexaholics Anonymous, and probably the one that I know about is SLA, which is Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. There's a number of those 12-step programs, and they're great support groups. The other thing I was reading about was in his autobiography back in 2014, American actor Terry Crews talked about his long-standing pornography addiction, which had affected his marriage and his life. There's also Russell Brand. He appeared in videos by American anti-pornography organization Fight the New Drug, which he ranted about pornography, and he was talking about pornography as the new drug. But you know, it's sort of a substitute one. Chris Rock, he's a comedian from America as well. He attributed his infidelity to pornography addiction. And also people like Hugh Grant. We know about Hugh Grant, and he's spoken out against pornography, and Emma Thompson. So
yeah, but it's interesting that you use the phrase spoken out. I mean, I'd be very interested to go look at what has been had to say, but it's a very loaded sentiment. Is it's spoken out, it comes with these kind of abstinent movement, kind of like no sex before marriage kind of things in the past, don't look at pornography because it is morally wrong or sinful kind of thing. I that's what worries me. Coming into this with very little understanding or experience, it's something that struck me. There's an extra room for marginality, to marginalise this community based on the fact that it can come across, or they might even hear this, those suffering may hear it as they are being lectured to on morality rather than, you know, perhaps perceiving somebody as just reaching out a helping hand, which is, it's just something that worries me because, you know, there's so many addictions you come across. There's those tricky little things which make it its own little mess, its own little nightmare to deal with. And
nevertheless, we've discussed pornography there are some ways of actually having a look at dealing with it if that's something that you're thinking you're having a problem with. Mm. We're actually going to be talking about first strategies tonight. That's what we're going to devote our program to, and we'll get back to that after this break.
This is Hooked on Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are on Hooked, and it's great to have you listening, great to have your company tonight on Hooked on Joy 94.9. It's the program about addiction. Tonight, Tosh is co-hosting with me. It's great to have you here, Tosh.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
Well, Russell is away in the Big Apple, in the big city. And tonight we have Big Daddy rejoining us. Big Daddy, welcome back to Hooked.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Now, you were on Hooked a little while back. It would have been Christmas Eve, actually, with another guest called PDM.
That's right.
What were you talking about that night?
12-step programs.
Correcto.
I think.
Yes. We were demystifying 12-step programs. Once again, another podcast if you want to have a listen and find out all about those. But it was a great show. And tonight, Big Daddy, we're going to be talking about first strategies. Mm. The reason I wanted to bring that up was because a lot of people do find that they're struggling in addiction. And what do you do first? What was the first thing you did when you thought you had a problem?
When I thought I had a problem, it was disbelief, really.
Denial.
You know? Denial, yeah, totally. And it was about, oh, well, I'm just a heavy drinker.
Yeah.
I don't need to go into any sort of program or recovery or anything like that. I just have to accept that as part of my life, that I'm a heavy drinker. Yeah.
Yeah. But you did make attempts to change that. Can you remember the very first thing?
Look, there were a range of activities that I looked at and even participated in. You know, one of them was to go and do a detox as an inpatient at a hospital, where they gave me massive amounts of Valium. And, I slept all day for about 5 or 7 days. I wasn't drinking.
I thought you were going to say 5 or 6 weeks, but it did.
They needed the bed. You know, you could only stay there for about 6 or 7 days. You know, every now and again a doctor would come around to me and say, you know, oh, you really should stop drinking. And at the end of the 7 days, I just walked straight out the door and went straight over to the bottle shop and bought a cask of wine and went home. And there were a number of different activities that I did over a number of years before I actually finally got sober. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I wanted to talk about as a first line thing that people may consider if they're struggling with an addiction of any sort is possibly talking to their doctor. Now, we've talked to a number of people on this show about addictions, and often they say they lied to their doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, the story we've heard a few times is, I went to my doctor, he said, oh, you know, how much are you drinking, for example? Oh, yeah, just a few a day, when in fact they were drinking a few bottles a day. Mm. How do you feel that as a strategy? Maybe, Tosh, what advice would you give about talking to your doctor?
It's certainly coming from a governmental perspective. It's the first, you look at any public approach to you know, public health management in regards to addiction, and talking to your GP is often the first thing they encourage you to do. And, you know, I had mixed experiences myself. I once went into a new GP and they asked me how many standard drinks I had a day and how many cigarettes I smoked a day, and I walked out and went to a different doctor. They didn't ask me that question.
Did you lie at the time?
Well, no, I didn't fill out the form. I lied in different places. You know, I would dabble around and say, oh, I'm feeling a little bit sad, or certainly I struggle with suicidal ideation. You know, there was a lot of dancing around that. Absolutely a first-line strategy of talking to your doctor. And if we want to talk about, you know, and not lying to them, on the occasion that I went to my GP and said, I have a problem, you know, first with, you know, my mental health, when I went to them and said, I have a problem, you know, I am incredibly depressed, it worked out, you know, very well. I had a mental health care plan and I was off to see
straight away.
Psychologist the next week. And you know, that's another part of the journey. I won't say things got better then. That's my own experience. But when I was ready to tell the truth about that, you know, I had options available to me immediately.
Yeah.
And looking back at my own experience, and I'm sure others can attest to this, that everybody else had a better idea about how to look after me at the time than myself.
You know, of course, doctors have got confidentiality, which is part of their whole creed. And at the same time, some people may not be quite comfortable going to their regular doctor. I mean, we can go to any doctor we like in this country. Big Daddy, you were in a country town. What sort of things did you tell your doctor?
Anything but the truth. One comment I'd make about doctors is, though, I was never called out by my doctor. You know, they do blood tests, and obviously my liver function would be elevated and things like that, and he'd get me in to talk about the tests that he'd done, and ask me why my liver function might be elevated, and I said, I'd sort of deny it. And
I had prawns last night.
Yeah, or, you know, whatever. It was never that I had several bottles of wine last night or what.
No.
And so I do remember, even though it was a long time ago, that I was never really challenged by my doctor. And maybe, you know, if there's any people out there in the medical profession, maybe you need to challenge your patients a little bit more, and maybe, you know, particularly if you know that it's quite evident that they're lying to you.
Maybe sometimes it's a time constraint, but there are some excellent GLBTIQ practices where people may be able to actually feel a little bit more comfortable and go to those. I can't actually give you names of doctors on community radio, but you can certainly do a search on some of those. Now, Tosh mentioned before a mental health care plan, and that is actually a session of usually 10 sessions with a psychologist.
Well, it entitles you to 10.
Yeah, that's also rebated on Medicare, so it's free consultations with a psychologist.
Yeah.
Have you done that at all, Big Daddy?
Yeah. I've done that several times, both in when I was still drinking.
Yes.
And also in sobriety.
And since I've been sober. Of a great benefit?
Certainly in sobriety it has been.
Yeah.
Again, it was a searching for the magic wand. You know, it was just a different health professional. Instead of being my GP, it was, maybe you need to go and talk to this person. And again, it was there was an element of denial with the psychologist to be able to, to lie and all of that sort of stuff. I was actually even referred to a psychiatrist at one stage.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's sort of like getting the big stick out.
It is up in the ante quite considerably.
And I remember at one stage that the psychiatrist said to me that, you know, he said, well, you know, really, unless you tell the truth, I can't help you.
Yeah.
You know, there's not much point in you coming back to see me.
I doubt if you liked hearing that.
No, I didn't. And I told him to get fucked and I walked away, you know, and didn't go to any health professional for a number of months. You know, and effect that it had on me at the time when I was in, drinking a lot and still...
In active addiction.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Once again, I suppose, as a first line of defence, if somebody is considering maybe those things... The message there is that you've got to be honest. There's also drug and alcohol counsellors, which we'll come back to a little bit later on because there's some amazing resources for our community as well. Medications.
Now, this brings... I would love to... This provides a great segue for me.
You love medications?
Oh, just pop them all the time. No, and I must admit, I'm still on, you know, prescribed medications for my mental health. Still to this day, I've come off a lot of them. But you mentioned... You politely told your doctor where to go and what to do with it. And this is a very... I actually was thinking back again on my own experience because it's all about me. Here is the guest on...
the co-host.
Yeah, the co-host. I've been promoted. I had a couple of bad experiences, and these are very important with first-line experiences because specifically one with medication, one specific SSRI, antidepressant, sorry, in particular, which... did not work for me at all. And even when I was getting prescribed that, I was fully aware that there are many different types on the market with many different effects. But I had one bad experience.
What was that with? Which medication?
Fluoxetine, or I can't remember the name exactly. Just a type of antidepressant. And I can't recommend you either. They work differently for different people. So do not take my experience as your own. But if you do have a bad experience, shop around. And I'll say this because... they work by, you know, obviously taking off the peaks of cutting off the troughs of your experience, mm-hmm. you know, mentally or emotionally throughout the day. But what I found is very specifically it meant that I stopped enjoying things like sunsets and music just as much. And it was awful. It was what I felt at the time that was all I had to enjoy. Sure. I'd convinced myself this was the case.
With that class of drugs, I think you definitely need to go back to your health professional in order to see what's going on. Big Daddy, I think you've mentioned before that there is a couple of other drugs that are used to treat addiction.
One of the attempts that I had at getting sober was an inpatient, started as an inpatient at a hospital here in Melbourne, and I was given Antabuse.
Antabuse,
which is a pretty toxic sort of drug that facilitates a huge illness reaction if you drink alcohol while you're taking this drug.
But nevertheless, that could be for some people a good line of defence or a good strategy to start their road perhaps to recovery. Look, we're going to talk more about these first line strategies after this break.
On Joy.
You're listening to Hooked with David and Tosh, Joy 94.9's program about addiction. If you're experiencing immediate problems or if content of this program raises issues that cause distress, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36.
Yes, that's right. And you are listening to Hook. Tonight we're talking about first strategies. So if you think you may be an addiction, or if you think there is a bit of a problem going on, these first strategies are ways that you might want to start approaching your problem. That's assuming you feel that it's a problem. Not everybody does.
Yeah.
Look, the next one that I thought we'd go on to is some people's first strategy is a rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Been to one?
Yes, I have myself, and it's funny you mentioned that some people might not feel like it's a problem. Well, I bloody well feel like I didn't have to go to rehab when I went in. It took me a long time to get there. I did have a positive experience. That's where I got sober, and I've been sober since. But they're profoundly strange things, and you know they can be exactly the right thing, and for many other patients they can be very off-putting. And
it's funny because we were talking about the whole idea of isolating an addiction.
Yeah.
And not wanting to see anybody and just further and further removing yourself from society, family, social functions, even almost to the point of not even going to work and things like that, yet you end up in a rehab and you're surrounded by other people.
Yeah, getting three meals a day cooked for you. It was grand.
Well, that's got to be nice. But you're surrounded by other people with similar problems.
Oh, yes.
That's the point.
Interesting. I learnt in rehab a combination of drugs that had quite a desired effect on me. That I remember taking them. Well, I was given them by doctors, but I sat there thinking, I wish I'd have tried this before. And, you know, certain rehabs don't give you medication. Mine did. But it's, you know, to each their own, it's a very significant step. It is a first-line strategy, I would definitely say, for recovery. But, you know, it's not something to jump into without, you know, some serious reflection from
it's going to disrupt your life. Not everybody is able to go, you know what, I'll just go into rehab for a month. Or also, you know, apart from having private health insurance that might pay for that, those people that don't will be looking at maybe 20 grand, 30 grand to go to a rehab if they can get a place immediately.
Yeah, or they have to wait for a public one.
Big Daddy, you went to a rehab, you mentioned before.
I went to several, in my path to sobriety.
So they weren't necessarily your first strategy, but they were a strategy along the way. Not everything's going to work. This is what we're talking about.
Strategies. Yeah. And probably the last rehab I went to, which was the most successful rehab.
Why was that?
Well, I haven't had a drink for 17 and a half years.
Why was that particular one the most successful? I was just about to explain.
It was a small group of people. There were only 10 people in the rehab. They were all alcoholics, so they were all the same as me. And there was nothing special in the rehab. The medical people were there just to supervise, to make sure that you were medically okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were a group of counsellors that introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous immediately, like the second day that I was there. And for me, that was my saviour, if you like. Introduced me to the AA program, and the rest is history, so far as I'm concerned.
So, in fact, another first strategy for many people could be just going to one of the 12-step programs.
Exactly.
And there's so many of them, of course.
Yeah, you just end up in a... chances are, if you end up in a park you've once got drunk in, there might be a meeting nearby.
Mm-hmm.
It's my experience, but...
Yeah, that's true. That's something I've heard many times over. Now, it's funny because both of you, I said to you, well, what about detox as a first strategy?
Mm.
And both of you have said to me, well, detox is the same as going into rehab. But there are other options for detox as well. Now, Big Daddy, you've mentioned there are home detoxes.
That's right. Another one of the in the mixed bag that I had was about a home detox for a couple of weeks where I was responsible for my own not drinking.
How does that work?
Well, you're given a booklet, and all of that sort of thing, and there's a nurse on call, or a professional, health professional, for you to be able to discuss how you're feeling during the day or whatever while it's happening. And you're given lots of medication. Again, there's the old Valium pops in there, because they're always frightened that certainly a person with alcohol, is, in my experience anyway, is that sometimes there can be physical side effects of detoxing too quickly from alcohol.
And certainly with drugs as well.
Yeah. And so Valium is a drug that's used a lot to push those, sort of make that medically okay.
Now, they wouldn't have gone ahead with that unless it works for some people. What sort of people do you think a home detox would work for?
I think you'd have to be pretty strong-willed and strong-minded, It didn't work for me, because it was just another way of, I'm trying, but I'm not really...
committing.
Every time I did, I've talked about my mixed bag of recovery and trying all of these first call options. For me, it was a case of being negative and trying to find why they wouldn't work for me.
This is why I've got you on here tonight.
Yeah, and that was each time I went. I even went to AA about, 30 or 40 times in the years before I actually got sober, and thinking, I had a huge ego, and so everybody there was below me and pretty fucked up, but I wasn't like them, and all of that sort of stuff.
Well, so at the same time, with the low self-esteem, you're a worthless piece of shit.
Totally. And it was a case of, as I said, I'd go to each of these different methods to seek, obviously seeking some sort of repair and alleviate my suffering in a way, but not being able to commit. And certainly trying to find things that were wrong, or why this particular first line of defence or whatever isn't going to work for me.
So detox is good, but it's not good enough for me. Now, I've got a mate, actually, who did do a home detox, and it worked for him. Now, I don't know whether maybe because he was in a relationship with a partner of his, and that made him a little bit more accountable, perhaps. And, when his partner got home from his job every day, he would be sort of like accountable to his partner. And, that could be an appropriate thing.
Different set of circumstances.
Yeah, different set of circumstances.
Yeah. I guess in that case, it's just an assistance to get through. Like, it's just a little bit of extra help to get you through what you might have always already wanted to do.
And that's getting a little bit of support from somebody close.
Yeah, just a little bit of extra help, I guess.
Yeah.
That's
but not everybody, unfortunately, in addiction has the support of somebody else because of the isolation, and also, burning every bridge in the book. I was going to talk about interventions, and I think we have this concept of interventions where a whole room of people corner the person that's in addiction and then, tie them up and send them off to rehab or something like that. But it's funny because when we were talking about Hello Sunday Morning the other week, I went online and checked out their site, and it's a very good website, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the web-based services. But in there, it actually gave people a way to talk to those in addiction, which would be in an interventional way, but completely different to, you've got a bit of a drinking problem, Mark, or Betty, or Sue, you've got to stop doing this. And we've found that saying stop doing it doesn't seem to work. But their way is intervening by saying, well, can we find a time to actually talk together?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, Tosh, can we find a bit of time together? And then approaching the subject saying, look, I know you're under a lot of stress. Yeah. I can see you're having a really bad time. Is this particular addiction, is this part of your problem?
Mm-hmm.
And taking it from there. And that's a different sort of intervention. Have you...
Well, I mean, I hope on your list is talking honestly and openly with a friend, Because if you're lost in a mire, then, you know, if there are people in your life who still care about you, then they might have the agency or the know-with-all to help you out, you know. Intervention is not something I'm familiar with, but I wanted to ask quickly, Big Daddy and David, how many people did you have left in your life at the end of your drinking who might sit you down in a room and tell you to stop drinking?
Certainly in my addiction, I didn't have very many people left. There were a few very close people, a couple of family members, work colleague and a lover as well, although I'd shunned all of those in that particular period through my addiction. So what about you, Big Daddy?
In my case, I was in a relationship, and that was, it was an unhealthy relationship in a lot of ways, because it was codependent. You know? My partner enjoyed picking me up.
Yeah, taking care of you.
And taking care of me and all of those sorts of things.
So enabling and also I'll take care of you as well.
And there were also a number of friends. I'd like to make the point that I had a lot of friends that were unaware of the severity of my alcoholism and the impact it was having on my life. They thought, Mark always gets pissed and has a drink and, you know, we go out and I'll drink as much, twice as much as everybody else. But they weren't aware that it was destroying my life.
Addicts are very sneaky people. Yeah. I just wanted to touch on meditation, Big Daddy. Another first strategy.
Yeah, and it's been effective. I've used that in particularly in sobriety, being referred to a psychologist who believed in mindfulness meditation as a way of being able to learn strategies to cope with daily anxiety and stress of normal life and all of that sort of stuff. A thing instead of reaching for a drink or drug change the way you feel.
Another interesting first strategy. Absolutely. So you could get somebody to be a facilitator of that. Yep. We're going to talk more about first strategies in just a moment, and we've just got a little break and then we'll be back.
This is Hooked on Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are listening to Hooked on Joy 94.9 with Tosh as my co-host tonight.
G'day.
And also Big Daddy. He's been our guest and we've been talking, what about Big Daddy, about first strategies?
Yes, that's right. First strategies, things that you might want to employ to find out a little bit more about getting off your particular drug or alcohol of choice. Right. Yeah.
It's about breaking that cycle of addiction. Now, we've gone through a number of big of different strategies, which would involve actually doing something, going out and seeking a doctor, getting a mental health care plan, rehabs, meditation, all sorts of things. But there are some amazing online web-based services. Now, Thorn Harbour Health has an amazing service on there, and they do address alcohol and drug services. They have their own recovery support. They have counsellors. There are all sorts of groups. There's certainly the therapeutic group, and I don't know whether you've heard about Rewired, Tosh, but...
No, they don't ring a bell. Tell me.
Rewired is a free 8-week program for men who have sex with men, aimed at helping them learn skills and strategies to change their methamphetamine use. And that's for men that are addicted to crystal meth. Mm-hmm. There's also another program called Drink Limits, and it's a free 8-week group for lesbian and bisexual women who are concerned about their drinking. So if you go to Thorn Harbour Health and you do have concerns about your particular addictions, if it's in that area, guess how much they cost, Mark?
I would suggest that they are very inexpensive, David.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
They actually probably don't cost anything.
Well, they are free services. Mm. And I think, you know, one of the briefs of our program here, Hook, is to look at some of the strategies, but also this is within Thorn Harbour Health, who are well known within our community, and it's a free service, and people don't necessarily know about that.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Queer Space is another great website to go and check out, because they also offer counselling as well. They have counselling sessions during business hours, and they can be one-off weekly, fortnightly, monthly, and it's worked in collaboration with your counsellor. We actually have one of the counsellors coming on in a couple of weeks' time, Mark Camilleri from Queer Space.
Wonderful.
The cost of counselling through Queer Space is, guess how much, Tosh?
Oh, possibly $0?
Free once again.
Wonderful.
So these are two major organisations that we have at our disposal that we tend to forget that, you know, look, if I identify that there is a problem and I'm not going to continue denying it, I never knew in addiction for myself that these sorts of things were available.
Yeah.
And I doubt if Big Daddy knew about them. No. Tosh, I doubt if you knew about them either.
Well, a big big one for the young men and women out there is Headspace, of course, and they
yes.
do great work similarly. And if you search through them, they've got similar services to provide as well.
Hello Sunday Morning, which I've talked about before, mm-hmm. Of course, is a great resource, and there are all sorts of strategies on there, and it's an online forum as well.
Yeah.
There's 110,000 people.
That's a lot of people.
That are involved with Hello Sunday Morning. Now, we will be having an interview with the founder, Chris Rain, in a couple of weeks' time. It'll be on Monday the 11th, which is a public holiday, so
wonderful.
Be listening in for that. Jack Nagel was one of our guests a number of weeks ago. Jack Nagel offers support for... He was actually a crystal meth addict, and he offers support online services. They do cost money, but not everybody is able to maybe go to a rehab.
No. I mean, we'd rather more services rather than less, regardless of what they provide and, you know, how much they cost. You know, it's better to have more out there than not, you would think.
Well, sometimes I think also, you know, if you're in active addiction and you're at home and you don't want to do anything and get out there, a web-based service may be a good way to start. Big Daddy, you've heard about Quit Victoria?
Yeah.
We were talking with Quit Victoria recently about their online services to help people stop smoking. That's also another great resource. 100-day challenge was with Responsible Gambling Victoria.
Yes.
I actually joined up just to see how easy the app was to use. And this is for people that have a problem with gambling.
Mm-hmm.
I've joined up. I've actually been 21 days not gambling. Now, I'm not a gambling addict, but I continue to read some of the messages that are on the 100-day challenge. People do actually post in a forum. It's an amazing resource as well.
It's wonderful.
And Big Daddy, have you heard of Shark before? The Shark Group?
No.
No.
Tell me about them.
Okay, well, the Shark Group are a... usually they offer rehab services and things like that, but they also have a phone counselling service called Family Drug Helpline. Now, this is for people that are affected by those of us that are in addiction. So, you know, the ripple effect is huge, isn't it? Where, you know, loved ones are affected and they start to, as you were saying before, you know, you were in a relationship, Big Daddy, and you were enabled and you were taken care of. So this is the sort of service for people like your ex-partner who, if they'd had a chance, they could have found out that they weren't at fault and they couldn't have continued blaming themselves
That's
and
right.
maybe stopped enabling. Would that have made a difference?
Possibly, yeah. It might have, you know, certainly might have brought a reality to me more quickly than it did happen, yeah.
Yeah. And also Smart Recovery. I think, Tosh, do you know something about Smart Recovery?
No, actually, I don't.
Okay.
No.
All right. No, I thought maybe you did. We were talking to a counsellor in, I can't remember where he was from, but he was certainly a drug and alcohol counsellor. And Smart Recovery is a different group of people. It's not 12-step based, but it is groups of people that get together, and it is peer support as well.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I'm all for that.
What about picking up the phone?
Oh, so many numbers, so much time. And who did I call?
Who did you call?
No one.
No one. Did you call anybody, Mark?
No, it was going to interrupt the way I wanted to drink, really.
I think I used to call some of my family members and other people just to tell them exactly what I thought. But
right.
at the same time, if you are looking for a phone service, we always talk about Lifeline and Beyond Blue.
Yeah.
They are amazing resources. You can go online, lifeline.org.au, beyondblue.org.au, and also the Shark Line that I just talked about. Quit Victoria, of course, is, you know, it's not only a web-based service, but you can also call the Quit Line, which is also good in case you're craving a cigarette right now. There's also Switchboard. Our own community Switchboard. I can't remember the number. I will put a link up in our podcast, but Switchboard is pretty amazing. And also, let's see, you were talking about alcohol before. There's AA Victoria.
Yep.
What happens if you ring them up?
They've got a helpline too. It's only staffed between certain hours and things, but there's certainly some people there that are able to give first-hand experience of their recovery. And for people with alcohol, you can ring those. There's an office
In Richmond, I think?
Richmond, that's right, yes.
And what would they do? What would they do if they talked to you?
They just talk to you, answer your questions, give you some advice about where you might go and seek some of the services you've spoken tonight about the first line stuff, about where you could go and get more information.
No, Big Daddy, how though would you rate just telling a friend or a family member, a loved one, how important would you say it is if you think you have a problem just to tell somebody?
Well, I think that's a first step, isn't it, for any, no matter what addiction you're talking about, it's the admission to yourself that you've got a problem. So it's about stopping the denial and letting the ego down and saying, okay, I've got a problem here and I really need to do something about it, you know.
Yeah. It's very hard to take that very first step, and we encourage you here on Hooked that if you do think there is a problem, you know, I've heard of people that had 12-step books in their, you know, under their bed and things like that because they've actually thought about it. And sometimes people do have that inkling that there is a problem. You can go to our podcast probably on Wednesday and there'll be a whole list of all of these different sorts of resources, certainly the online and the phone numbers. And, you know, it's just asking for help at last.
Yeah.
For the first time. We hope that you've enjoyed tonight's show and remind you that if you're experiencing immediate problems or if content of this program raises issues that cause distress, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36.
It is important, of course, to move away from the self-destructive reasoning. Recovery involves breaking the cycle of addiction, removing the trigger of negative thinking, and restoring us to emotional sobriety. One of the greatest highs in life is feeling good about ourselves. Always remember that none of us are alone in this world and that the first step in recovery is to ask for help.
We want our community to be one of hope and look forward to your company next week as we continue to explore addiction on Hooked. Meanwhile, it's goodbye from Tosh.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me, David. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.